Always my pleasure to be here, and it's so great to see everybody. I love this beautiful sangha. So what a week. And, this week looks so different than last week. I'm still going through a little bit of PTSD, not to minimize anybody who has a serious PTSD, but I feel like I've been, kind of catching myself in moments of sort of forgetting, forgetting that I'm not bound to this sense of this crushing sense of anxiety and I don't want to say terror, but feelings of they're not here anymore. There's this there is hopefulness, there is a lightness, and I just have to keep reminding myself of that. That this period has passed, whether it's been 3 months or a few months or 4 years, what some of us have been feeling. It reminds me of this story. I don't know if folks have heard this story about an elephant. There's this elephant. There's a man who's walking. I don't know if he's walking in a forest, but he sees an elephant, and this elephant is tied to a rope. He's tied to a tree with a very thin, very small rope. And he wonders, why isn't this elephant just breaking free, this huge elephant? And I don't know if you've seen, I actually just recently saw where elephants, because I think because of the fall and the squashes and everything that are available, but they've been feeding them these huge pumpkins that are bigger than me and possibly, at least half of my car, but these huge pumpkins, and the elephants will just come and bloop, and they just squish them with their feet so easy, like it's nothing. And elephants, they're massive, massive creatures. So this little bitty rope. Standing not too far away. And he's like, why don't they run away? Why don't they break free? And he explains that they train them since they're little with the same rope, and they never change the rope. And so the elephant just believes, that he can't break free. So we need to remember that we are elephants, and there's nothing else holding us to that place of anxiety and despair. So I wanted to, we just have to remember to come back to the body, come back to mindfulness. And to actually what's happening here. So I wanted to keep it simple this week. And I just want to talk about mindfulness. Wise mindfulness. This thing that we are doing. What is this thing that we're doing? Mindfulness practice. So there's a sutta, part of the Buddha's discourse. It's called the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or Turning of the Wheel of Dharma. So the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or Dhammacakka. And it's basically the Four Noble Truths. So we know it as the Four Noble Truths. Each of us have heard it in that way. And it's known as the Buddha's first sermon. And so basically the Buddha, after he attains enlightenment and all of this, and he spends some time sort of synthesizing, his insights, his awakening. He's trying to think of how he can convey this to people and what he can do. And so he comes up with the Four Noble Truths, and he believes that he can just teach this to people, that people will understand this. He almost decides not to teach, But ultimately, he decides to do it. And so the four truths, right? We know what they are. The truth of suffering, right? In this life, there is suffering or discomfort. There's dukkha, however we want to call it. To be alive, we're going to experience dukkha. The cause of dukkha, right? Our grasping, our clinging. The third truth, that freedom is possible. The truth of freedom, the Buddha's life is an example. And the fourth truth is the path, right? The path to freedom. It is the eightfold path, the path to freedom. And so there are eight elements to the path. And this is, I'll show you pictures. Let's see here. Here we are. Oopsie. One moment. Let me get you some pictures of the Dharma wheel. See if you can see it. This is one. This is one from Japan. And you can see that it has eight spokes on it. This is known as the Dharma Chakra, or the Wheel of Dharma. This is a symbol that is older than the Buddha. This is before the Buddha's time. Here's one from China. Beautiful. Wheel of Dharma. And here's a Tibetan one. This one, I love this one. This one has the deer, which are symbolic of Deer Park, where the Buddha actually gave this sermon, the first teaching, a deer sanctuary. And so the eight spokes, the eightfold path. And so one of those, and I'll just read all eight of them to you. They are wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. And so if we develop these attributes, if we focus on these elements, you know, eventually we will attain, it is said. So if we walk this path, we will eventually attain. And, you know, wise or right, you know, you'll hear people say right livelihood or right view, or and we can say wise. Some people will say wise because it's basically cultivating a wise relationship to these things. And and why isn't it just mindfulness? You know, why is it wise mindfulness? Or wise view or wise intention. Well, you can have a view, you know, it doesn't mean that it's the right view. It doesn't mean that it's the wise view. You know, you can have speech, doesn't mean that it's wise speech. So wise, it is cultivating all of these elements in a way that is beneficial, that is helpful, that is wholesome. So what is mindfulness? Just so simple, right? More simple than it sounds. Or is it? So so basic, so foundational, so fundamental to this practice. And what is mindfulness? What is mindfulness? It's just the constant engagement of present moment experience. And in simplest terms, it's just mindful of what you're doing. Mindful of what you're doing, mindful of your surroundings, mindful of what's arising for you. Mindfulness is a tool that helps us to unearth Dharma, right? Mindfulness is this means, it is a tool that helps us to unearth Dharma. And the Dharma being the truth, the Dharma being your understanding of the truth, Things as they are, things as they have come to be. And it helps us to discover what's actually going on. You know, seeing beyond our beliefs, our emotions, and our stories, which we can become so mired in. And so the place where we begin that engagement, the engagement of our present moment experience, is the body. It's here in the body. Arguably, the body encompasses the whole of our human experience. And so the Buddha has multiple discourses on mindfulness, mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness immersed in the body. Satipatthana Sutta might be one that folks are most familiar with. And that speaks about the four foundations, the first four foundations of mindfulness, and the first being the body, and the next being feelings, feeling tones, and next being the mind and the phenomena or dharmas. So beginning to understand or ascertain the truth of things so that we might live with greater freedom, like the elephant, right? Or maybe a bit more equanimity in our lives, is very simply wise view, or seeing clearly. The beginning of wise view is cultivating mindfulness, that tool that aids us in gathering the picture, the whole picture in its entirety. And to recognize this moment accurately with wise understanding. And so through this process, we can free ourselves, our hearts and our minds, from a lot of the entanglement, the delusion and confusion that we can become so occupied with. And so when we can see the whole picture clearly, or gain clear understanding through mindfulness, an appropriate response is more likely to follow. And so this is part of, oh, I was just kicked out. Or what's happening? Oh, sorry, my computer did something funny and my screen disappeared.
I can see you fine.
Oh, good. Thank you. Adobe decided it wanted to try to install something. So this is part of a karmic relationship, right? Our appropriate response is how we respond in the moment. Karmic relationship or unfolding that ultimately leads to more and more freedom as we practice, as we walk through our lives in this way. So if we're interested in co-creating or manifesting the world that we want to see, we first got to be aware of what's happening right here. We're aware of our own mind states. And we've got to address and tend to our own fears and our own anxieties and hostilities and anger and dukkha or suffering. How many of us have had thoughts or emotions over the past few months or 4 years that we may not be proud of? You know, gee, I hope so-and-so, such-and-such doesn't get COVID, you know, winkety wink wink. I mean, really, you know, how many of us have had these kinds of feelings that don't necessarily resonate with our character or with our heart intentions? It's been an intense time for our emotional bodies, and lots to work with, to say the least. And so related to karma, we're in the midst of karma in this moment. You've heard me say in this very moment, dependent co-arising, whatever you want to call it. And so every arising circumstance has a cause and effect. And so effects or impacts in some way. Our beings, and so we will form instantaneously feelings or perceptions, and those formations become thoughts, and those thoughts become intentions, and the intentions become manifest. And so these actions, whatever they are, condition the next, and so on. And so we are creating, constantly creating the circumstances that become our life unfolding. And so the first step in working toward the world we want to live in and engaging our practice to that end is to work towards becoming more fully aware, just to being mindful, and to commit to gathering the whole picture and seeing clearly our own tendencies, and conscious or unconscious. And so where that anger, hatred, and violence arise from suffering, and aware that even those whose views we oppose suffer. And something I want to show you in terms of practice. The Buddha, in the Four Foundations, in the Satipatthana Sutta, one of the dhammas that the Buddha lays out is called the Seven Factors of Awakening. And I'll show it to you here. I'm good with visuals. Hopefully you can see it. It's on the black screen. But you can see I put mindfulness right in the middle. It's backwards. Is it backwards? No. Oh, good.
No, it's not backwards.
Oh, good. Mindfulness is right in the middle. And you can see the other six. So we have arousing factors and calming factors. And so the arousing factors are going to be investigation and energy, or sometimes referred to as effort. And then joy or rapture, sometimes referred to as rapture. You'll feel it in the body, piti. And the calming factors are tranquility, concentration, and then all pointing to equanimity. And so it's said that when practicing mindfulness, if your mind is agitated, if you're experiencing a lot of anxiety or agitation, you want to focus on the calming factors of just calm, like that pebble at the bottom of the river, and concentration and equanimity. And if your mind is feeling dull, or if you are, like sometimes we just have sort of a dullness and or maybe even a grogginess to us. And so you wanna focus on developing the arousing factors of investigation. You just start with investigation, and an energy can arise. An energy investigation kind of brings about sort of an interest, and that interest kind of brings about an enthusiasm, and you really just sort of naturally this natural energy or mindful or wise effort can arise. So not too much, not too little, but just the right amount. It's almost effortless, is what I like to say. Just getting into that investigation, and then you might begin to experience this delighted interest, this delighted sense of enthusiasm, which is joy. And it can last for a time, and it might go away. But after that delight, We sometimes can go into this placid sense of tranquility, and it's a very pleasant place to be. We have to be careful not to grasp onto it. But there's a concentration that will arise within that tranquility. And the Buddha says that there's no pleasure, no sense pleasure that is more divine than that place of samadhi. And equanimity will soon follow. So I'm going to leave you with a quote on mindfulness. Just so powerful, so simple, so powerful. And it's really just the heart of our practice. This is Thich Nhat Hanh. You know, he's one of my favorites. And he says, and I have to put on my glasses. These are my fancy glasses today. The energy of mindfulness is something concrete that can be cultivated. What we practice, walking mindfully, or our solid, peaceful steps cultivate the energy of mindfulness and bring us back to the present moment. When we sit and follow our breathing, aware of our in and out breath, we are cultivating the energy of mindfulness. When we have a meal in mindfulness, we invest all of our being in the present moment and are aware of our food and of those who are eating with us. We can cultivate the energy of mindfulness while we walk, while we breathe, while we work, while we wish or wash the dishes or wash our clothes. A few days practicing like this can increase the energy of mindfulness in you, and the energy will help you, protect you, and give you courage to go back to yourself, to see and embrace what is there. So, coming back to what is here, remembering like the elephant, you know, in our we got to get over this PTSD, I'm calling it, my minor case, so that we can work with what is really here. Maybe that's here, but I'm kind of in the midst of exhaling, and so I invite you to explore that that sense. So we have just a few minutes, 5 minutes or so. And we can go ahead and open it up. I think we can probably take a couple of comments or questions if anybody has anything that they would like to share. Anything that you'd like to share, pose to me or any large group. And if you do have something, you can either unmute yourself and begin to speak or just wave and Stephen can unmute you. I see Katie, Kate.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Syra. That was just lovely. And we've all got this nice bit of a yoke lifted, I think. But I just wanted to particularly say that the seven steps to awakening, is that what it was?
Seven factors.
Seven factors. Awakening. I've heard that before a couple of different Dharma talks, but this really helped clarify it for me, how to practically make it, how to put it to use in a practical kind of application in sitting practice. So thank you. Really appreciate that.
Oh, awesome. Oh, I love hearing that. Yay. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Lynn.
Yeah, hi, Syra. Thanks so much. I too got a lot out of your Dharma talk. Also, the way you explained the energizing factors and the calming factors, really fun. Yeah. And I have, you know, when I remember to do the practice and when I'm doing it, I have felt a lot of joy. And it's really nice that you talk about that, because it's it's a real touchstone, you know, whether or not I'm feeling miserable or not. It's a way I know. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Lynn. Oh, it's great to hear your laugh. See your smile. Loki.
It's just good to come back to the basic, and you sort of tied it all together with mindfulness and how that applies. So I really appreciate coming back, because sometimes for myself, there's either being scattered or being groggy, or just while staying at home, or delusional or self-absorbed, whatever. And you sort of, by making it basic, just revealed again the key, you know, a key that can be worked with, the mindfulness. And I'm just adding on to everything everyone else has said. So thank you. It was like being thirsty and getting that drink of water when you spoke.
Yay, wonderful. I'm so happy that was beneficial. Loki, it's so great to hear. I see you cut your hair off. Oh my goodness, what happened to Jesus? He looks so dapped, so clean cut, and beautiful as always.
Thank you. And you too.
Thank you.
Styra.
29. Carl.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that wonderful talk. And like Loki said, bringing us back to the basics of our practice. So let's sit together for a minute or two as we close, and we'll do a little metta. So let's sit.